Good afternoon. My name is Carrie Simpson, and I work for the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans Technical Assistance Center. I want to thank you for participating in today's call on promising practices for non-urban HVRP programs. On today's call, we are joined by two high-achieving HVRP grantees showcased in the upcoming Best Practices Profiles on Employment Assistance Programs publication. Programs serving veterans in non-urban areas face unique challenges when starting a program, forming community partnerships, and providing for the veterans. In today's call, I am pleased that Paulette Risden-Rice with Goodwill of the Heartland will discuss program startup and strategies to prepare veterans for placement. Richard Turner with Veterans Inc. will discuss staff planning and the importance of partnerships within the community. Both of our guest speakers have several years of experience working with veterans and navigating the intricacies of non-urban fields. I'd like to briefly go over the logistics of today's call. If at any time you have any questions, please email me at ksimpson, that's K-S-I-M-P-S-O-N, at nchv.org. Today's call will be approximately an hour, with time at the end for Q&A. I want to make sure that everyone has access to today's materials. If you do not have the presentation up in front of you, please visit our website, www.nchv.org, and click on the gray box that is outlined in red on the right side of the screen entitled NCHV Conference Calls. Here you can click on the link entitled Presentation 32912. Again, if you do not have the presentation up in front of you, please visit our website at www.nchv.org and click on the gray box that is outlined in red on the right side of the screen entitled NCHV Conference Calls. Here you can click on the link entitled Presentation 32912. I'll give everyone a chance to do this. Okay, great. We will end today's call with a question and answer session. If you would prefer to submit your question privately, or if we run out of time, please email your questions to me. Again, my email is ksimpson, K-S-I-M-P-S-O-N, at nchv.org, and we will get back to you. Once the call has been completed, we will compile a list of commonly asked questions and post the answers on our website at nchv.org. Again, if there are any questions at any time, please email me at ksimpson@nchv.org. I would like to begin by introducing Bailey Crone. Bailey is currently the Director of Technical Assistance Department here at NCHV. She is responsible for oversight of NCHV's research and communication staff to ensure that service providers around the country have access to timely, accurate, and comprehensive resources to support their program activities. And with that, here's Bailey.
Thank you, Carrie. And I will keep my statements pretty brief today to give our two speakers time to go through their program materials. I did want to mention, I think we actually updated the link on the website, so it should just be, the link should just say presentation with PDF and quotes next to it, and that should pull up the PDF of the presentation. So I'm going to start on slide one of that presentation. It says Employment for Homeless Veterans in Non-Urban Areas, March 29, 2012. We see a marked decline in the number of homeless veterans around the country in the most recent veteran supplement to the AHAR. This decline can be attributed to including the increase in HUD-VASH vouchers, successful placement of many grant per diem participants, the inclusion of veteran-specific data in the point-in-time counts, and the Homeless Veterans Reintegration Program under Department of Labor, which connects homeless veterans to employment preparation, placement, and follow-up services. These programs have seen success, and numbers of homeless veterans are declining, while other extreme low-income veterans are being rapidly rehoused and prevented from entering homelessness. What will be the connection between the millions of men and women coming home from OIF and OEF and veteran homelessness? What will homelessness look like as demographics and gender proportions change in veteran populations? What effect will a poor economy have on returning service members? And will this problem of unemployment and underemployment, when compounded by the push of PTSD, co-occurring disorders, MST, and destabilized home bases resulting from multiple deployments, be the catalyst of widespread veteran homelessness? We're beginning to see the effects of some of these shifts and can take lessons on addressing homeless veteran needs from innovative, creative programs that target employment as the key to facilitating self-sufficiency and confidence with housing, mental health supports, and various other wraparound supportive services as critical elements contributing to employment and success. If you go to slide two, what is HVRP? I don't know if everyone's aware, but the latest SGA, the Solicitation for Grant Applications, was published today. I have not had a chance to read through all of it, but I will let you know that NCHB will be hosting a series of teleconferences on the SGA and the application process next week. So if you have questions today specifically related to that, please hold on to those and register for next week's calls, because those will be specifically focused on the SGA process. But the current SGA has the same goals listed for the HVRP program, which you see listed there. Applications should either be designated as urban or non-urban. Today we're going to focus on non-urban calls. In the last SGA and also in the current one, awards can range from a minimum of $100,000 to a maximum award of $200,000 for non-urban grants. Vets usually award grants in both categories, but the total number of grants will be determined by the strength of the applications. And these will go into more detail in next week's call, so I'll move on from HVRP application process. On slide three, who are the HVRP grantees? As we're going through the best practices document, we recognize some key themes that were emerging. HVRP grantees are always established service providers, many of whom have been working in the field for over 30 years. They're very conscious of and responsive to changing veteran needs. Oftentimes, they receive other grant funding, so grant per diem, SSVF, or other mainstream sources of funding to supplement and support their program activities. And you can read through who generally the HVRP programs are, and we can focus more on that next week. Let's talk a little bit about the best practices, which is on slide four. In 2003, NCHB researched and produced a collection of HVRP profiles from around the country. The project served as a springboard for many organizations that wanted to develop or expand their employment assistance programs and offered a comprehensive view of the program and its benefits for media, service providers, government officials, and veterans who need assistance. We've expanded this project to explore unique aspects of the program, such as effective business skills training programs and the roles of DevOps and leavers in the program's successes. For the upcoming publication, which Carrie mentioned, NCHB is working with our partners at the Burton Blatt Institute to focus on key areas of service delivery, specifically training and employment, supportive services, housing, legal services, and partnerships. Of the existing grantees, 31 high-performing grantees were chosen to be part of this publication, including the two that we have on the call today. We continuously seek out representatives from urban and non-urban programs, faith-based and community-based organizations, small and large operations, and the government agencies that serve as community service network centers. So we'll talk a little bit about the key components that we recognize in the best practices organizations. I'm not going to go through these in too much depth because you have the outline of generally what these components are. But if you want to go on to the next slide, slide five, that says training and employment. Many grantees go above and beyond the mandate of the two main goals of HVRP to create new ways of effectively preparing homeless veterans for the job market. Some grantees do this while seeking out the hardest to reach homeless veteran populations, such as those with co-occurring disorders or chronically homeless veterans. Successful grantees have program staff who are very intimately familiar with providing outreach services to facilitate effective program startup. The goal is a successful recipe of targeted training that is job-specific and usually on the job with necessary supplies and items such as clothing, union dues, uniforms, transportation funds, and readiness tools like resume development and other interview tools. Moving on to supportive services, I listed a few there that are critical to supporting the objectives of the HVRP program. These are just a few of the additional pieces that best practice HVRP programs have integrated into their models to support their program activities. I just want to note the last one, the connection to the VA and other benefits. HVRP grantees do need to perform preliminary assessments of all of their participants to see if they are potentially eligible for VA benefits. And this relationship is a mutual one that can benefit veterans both within the VA programs and then HVRP. The next slide, connection to housing. Successful HVRP programs recognize that housing must fit the needs of the client. Many HVRP programs are actually co-located with grant per diem programs, and this provides an immediate source of transitional housing for program participants. Through connection to grant per diem, some programs which are involved in the VA's recent transition in place model, homeless veterans can secure stable grounding to achieve employment objectives by facilitating access to transitional housing and later permanent housing through HUD-VASH, Section 8, transition in place, or independently secured apartments or homes. HVRP programs set their participants up for success. It's important to note that because no HVRP funds can be expended for housing, success in this element requires really extensive community collaboration and integration with the continuum of care, which is a very, very substantial move for a lot of the best practices profiled organizations. The next piece, addressing legal barriers, is a really substantial issue that a lot of HVRP programs that have been best practices have really engaged with. With over 60,000 veterans released from incarceration each year, many of whom are going to sustain long-term unemployment that can eventually lead to homelessness, recognizing the effects of legal barriers on employment are really critical, and HVRP programs have been integral in addressing some of these issues. For formerly incarcerated veterans that have limited access to social networks and may have difficulty keeping up with changing technology during their incarceration, their employment options are limited, which HVRP grantees have been aware of, and they make concerted efforts to lessen the impacts of incarceration with things like discharge upgrades, working on interview and application assistance, child support interventions, and getting homeless veterans involved not only in stand down in homeless court but also in veteran treatment court, and also working with the Veteran Justice Outreach Program liaisons at the VA Medical Center. If you have more interest in learning more about homeless courts, we recently did a teleconference on that with Homeless Court founder Steve Binder. You can find more information about that in our teleconference archive, or you can email Carrie as well. And the next slide, slide 9, obviously organizations that are successful collaborate to avoid redundancy. I think that's fairly self-explanatory, so I'll just move on from that one. Now let's talk about the real purpose of today's call, which is to understand more thoroughly what non-urban programs have been able to do for homeless veterans. Now, what exactly is a non-urban program? According to Department of Labor's HVRP program, all non-urban HVRP grant applicants have to demonstrate that the proposed area to be served has a population less than the number given, 569,463, which is the smallest population on the list of 75 U.S. cities. Now, this information here is actually from the last SGA, but I believe that the current SGA also uses 2000 census data. So that link that's provided to the 75 largest U.S. cities should be the same, but we will update that if it is any different on the presentation located on the website. I want to talk a bit about the trends and barriers that specifically relate to veterans in non-urban areas, focusing on how their location creates difficulties accessing gainful employment and services that support independent living. So on slide 11. Many homeless veterans, including OIF, OEF veterans, experience significant psychological challenges related to their service, including PTSD, TBI, MST, and substance use disorder. While the prevalence rates of mental illness is generally comparable in both urban and non-urban areas, for veterans in non-urban areas, increased experience with negative stigma related to treatment and a disproportionate dearth of available services increases the possibility that veterans in need of care are not actually able to access services. Self-medication and the disconnection from care can lead to difficulty maintaining employment and can cause veterans to slide into homelessness. Successful non-urban HVRP programs recognize their role as first responders and make concerted efforts to connect other first responders and resources adapted to rural homeless veteran needs, such as religious institutions, community colleges, community-based outpatient clinics, and VA telemedicine systems. In fact, most people, or more people with mental illness issues in non-urban areas, first seek care from their clergy before going to formal providers in the first place. Mental health issues act as barriers to employment for homeless veterans, but other barriers exist as well. 40% of rural Americans have no access to public transportation. Low-skilled jobs are prevalent, which often have lower wages, and underemployment and seasonal employment can lead to unstable placement. Now, with that shiny, rosy view of the status of homeless veteran care in non-urban areas, I'm going to turn the call back over to Carrie, who's going to introduce our folks over at Goodwill Industries of the Heartland.
Thank you, Bailey. And just a reminder, if you do have any questions before our Q&A, feel free to email me at ksimpson@mchv.org.
Unless they are specifically related to the SGA, in which case, hold them until next week.
Yes. I would like to introduce Paulette Risden-Rice with Goodwill of the Heartland. Paulette has been employed with Goodwill for approximately 6 years. She currently holds the title of Program Director and oversees all programs and services for the East region of Goodwill of the Heartland, including the HVRP program. Before becoming Program Director, Paulette worked as an employment specialist for the HVRP program. Paulette holds a bachelor's degree in business from Western Illinois University and a master's degree in business administration from St. Ambrose University. Prior to working for Goodwill, Paulette worked as an employment specialist for other nonprofit and state agencies performing the same type of work. Paulette has 13 years of experience in the social services field, working with a wide range of populations, including ex-offenders, dislocated workers, low-income, and at-risk youth. Goodwill of the Heartland's HBRP team will be starting the last quarter of a second-term grant award. Their HBRP team has grown to 6 employees in the past 6 years and has assisted over 1,200 veterans in their employment endeavors. Paulette?
Hi, thank you. I am going to talk a little bit today about startup barriers and pre-employment training. Many organizations go through startup woes no matter what program you're dealing with, and we struggled a little bit in the beginning with our program. Because of time, I'll be brief and give a short list of what we dealt with here in our region. We started with no real plan for success. We had the grant proposal that was written by our regional program director, Carmen Heck, and we used that as a reference guide, but we were really not sure how to implement certain tasks to achieve overall program goals. We had a little bit of staff turnover as well, which included the sudden death of our program coordinator, who was also a veteran himself and had the experience that we needed to move forward with the program. We only had one partnership developed. We did not have any connections with any businesses in the area to place veterans into community employment, no outlook on the number expected to be served. We had goals of enrollments and placements and assessments, but we didn't really know how to get the veterans through our doors. And then one major piece we struggled with were the placements. Because of our economy, it was a little tougher to obtain the community employment sites that we anticipated. Because this was a new program for us with different requirements than what we were used to, our files were not organized properly, and that took a little bit of time to correct. We met with our grant officer, and he provided us guidance and a few tips, so we got all of the files in order. Everything was corrected. We also had a few problems with reporting and setting up the TPR in our record system. It seemed like every quarter we were going back through paperwork and records manually to track information and find errors because the TPR was not matching up with our numbers. To start HVRP, there were really two of us. There are 6 now, but at the time, there was myself as the employment specialist and Steve Bunn, who is our case manager for the program. Between the two of us, we worked 10 to 12-hour days. On some days, we accepted calls in the evenings and on the weekends. We helped with transportation at times when we probably really shouldn't have, and I'll touch more on that in a minute. But we did all that to keep the program going. We had a difficult time gaining referrals and enrolling qualified veterans, and we didn't want them to disappear after we enrolled them in the program. For example, many times we would enroll a veteran, hand out a bus pass or a gas card, assign them to a store to gain work experience training, buy them a few items of clothing, and we'd never see them again. So this practice really hurt our numbers at the end of each quarter. So we made a few changes. We created a few partnerships and networked in our community, and we overcame that barrier. And I won't talk a lot about community partnerships because Richard's going to talk about external community partnerships in a few minutes. But the partnership aspect is a vital part of HVRP and having a successful program. The more partners you have, the stronger tips are, the more successful your program will be, for as well as helping the veterans. And it's also less work for you. The more people who work together to achieve a common goal is great. It took a little bit of time for us, but we developed partnerships with the local homeless shelters, Veterans Affairs offices, Iowa Workforce Development, and local county reps, and we were able to have a steady stream of referrals to keep us busy. Our case manager also went out at 5 a.m., 4:30 on certain mornings to walk the rivers and locate homeless veterans. And this is something he did with our VA partners and other community agencies on a regular basis. So it takes dedicated staff to get the program up and running. You really need people whose hearts are in it and really care about the veterans and the program overall. One thing I would suggest to make sure to do at startup is to take the time to determine not only what you will assist the veterans with, but also how you will help them. You have to have barriers with the veteran population. We experienced a lot of manipulation, distrust, and program abuse in the beginning, and I think that was more of our fault with our inexperience in facilitating this type of program. We didn't have anything in place to keep the veterans coming back to us to complete program goals. So you have to have discipline and barriers, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be flexible to change your style of service delivery if that's needed. The service delivery should be individualized and not grouped together. For example, we had such a difficult time finding the veterans and getting them through our doors that we offered incentives such as free bus passes or gas cards, clothing, everyday necessities. But after realizing that many of these vets were coming through and enrolling in the program with no intentions of gaining employment, we had to alter our requirements for receiving these incentives. We no longer gave clothing unless they obtained employment. We only gave a gas card after they attended class sessions, and we require all of the veterans to attend the class sessions. We offer transportation as needed, whether it was to help a veteran move into his or her own apartment or to get to a doctor's appointment or a job interview. So there did come a time when we had to evaluate whether the transportation assistance was enabling some of their behaviors. Many would come to us for a ride to an appointment when we had issued a bus pass at the beginning of the month. So we're very careful now when we provide transportation because we want to keep everything within the guidelines of obtaining employment. We added components to our program as we went along. As we gained more enrollees, we were able to do more with the program itself. We were able to hold class sessions every week in which we teach life skills, conflict resolution, maintaining employment. We have a variety of topics that are covered. We also offer a meal at each class session, which increases attendance numbers. We added a cash register training component and customer service course, which I'll talk about in a few minutes. And we offered group sessions in which the focus was to discuss particularly about substance abuse and other issues that hindered employment and success in life in general. We have a fitness component to our program, which has become a great hit with the veterans. We exercise, we lift weights with the veterans. We purchase bicycles, which serves a dual purpose because it not only improves health, but it also provides transportation to get to and from work and other appointments. We purchase YMCA memberships and offer mentor events for the veterans. And these two activities, the memberships and the mentor events, are funded through our Goodwill Basic Services Fund, so no money comes out of grant funds for these activities at all. And our mentor events consist of current veterans in our program. They meet with HVRP staff, graduates of our program, and other positive members of our community once per month to participate in more fun-type activities. Past group activities include laser tag, bowling, going to the movie theater, dinner, billiards, and fishing. And these activities have become a huge success. We went from a handful of vets in attendance each month to an average of 20 to 25 per month now. These activities give the vets a chance to interact with positive influences and have fun outside of the office walls. It engages trust and cohesiveness also within the group. We try to think outside of the box to keep veterans engaged in our services. We were so used to only doing what was absolutely necessary to meet goals, and we never strayed away from the program norm, but we found ways to assist the vets and offer things that they wouldn't necessarily receive elsewhere. We joined committees in the community, attended outreach meetings. We did whatever we could to get our name out there and find the agencies that we should be working with. So it takes time, but it is very important. The last slide attached for the teleconference is something that we hand out to our partners as well as all of our veteran clients. It gives a general overview of what our program is all about. So all of the circles are vital to success for the vet while enrolled in the program. In order for preparation of veterans into employment, the biggest part of our program is the work experience and training component in our local Goodwill retail stores. It's also a plus for us because we can put the veterans to work immediately at minimum wage pay in order for them to receive income. And they also keep coming back for services and to work on program goals. Many times when vets call our office, the first thing they say is, "Hey, I heard that I can start in the Goodwill store tomorrow." And they ask us, is that true? So, and it is. We can enroll the veterans and put them to work in one of our stores right away. They have a maximum of 12 hours per week, and this is done so that they can search for outside employment while working. They must turn in job search logs weekly and meet with our employment specialist regularly in order to remain in the store. They must also attend weekly class sessions and attend all scheduled appointments with our VA partners and attend all medical appointments. If they do not comply with program goals, we can pull them from store training. While in the store, they are trained by our job coach on tasks associated with every aspect of a retail store. This includes donations, hanging, tagging, sorting, stocking shelves, janitorial, cash register, and customer service. And the cash register aspect is geared toward those veterans who are looking for a career in retail. It's not mandatory for anyone who is not looking to build a career in retail. The customer service aspect is required. Customer service is a skill that's needed in every job, not necessarily retail, so we feel that every vet can benefit from that. The veterans also work on certain skills needed to gain permanent employment in the community, such as getting along with coworkers, showing up on time to work, working a specific schedule with breaks and lunches. Now, problems do arise in the stores because many of these vets are dealing with substance abuse issues, criminal backgrounds, PTSD, among other medical conditions, so it takes a while for some to learn how to show up for work on time and work an entire shift with no problems. Many of our vets that we serve here in our region have been out of work for a long time, for years. We have many Vietnam veterans, and they need assistance with everyday life skills and a work ethic. So our job coach and store staff works with them to ensure that they follow the same rules as everyone else in the store. Some of our rules are relaxed for the veterans, but for the most part, they're pretty much held to the same standard as everyone else in the store. As I said earlier, the veterans only work 12 hours per week in order to leave time to search for permanent employment, because searching for permanent employment is a full-time job in itself. We have roughly 30 vets who have gone on to be hired in permanent full and part-time positions in our stores. Some of these jobs are just stepping stones for vets, but for others, it is the beginning of a retail career. So we feel that our training component in our stores is a pretty important part of our entire program. Now, we do not count the work experience positions toward our placement numbers. However, if a veteran is permanently hired, we do count the placement. We do experience problems from time to time with the veterans in our stores, no different from any other staff issues that we would have in our stores. If we do have problems in the stores or with attendance at class sessions or work searches, we do pull the vet from the store. We feel that working in the store is not only training for the veterans, but it is a privilege as well. We've had many vets hired in our store, but a few actually maintain it and have been successful and are still employed. With the veterans that we serve, we found that after about a year and a half of employment, they tend to fall back and be re-enrolled into the program and work on goals and everything all over again. So we are working on more of a job retention component for next year and to incorporate that and hopefully keep more of our veterans employed over a longer period of time. I'd just like to say that our team is committed to serving veterans who have served our country, and we are very grateful to have this opportunity to do that. We take pride in what we do, and we have the utmost respect for each veteran that we serve. Over the past 6 years, we've served over 1,200 veterans, and we hope to be able to continue to do that. So I can answer any questions you have at the end of the session, and my contact information will be attached also if you'd like to contact me or any member of our team directly. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Paulette. If you do have any questions for Paulette, remember, we will have time at the end. Next, I would like to intern with Veterans, Inc. Richard has been working in Veterans Services for the past 4 years. His career at Veterans, Inc. started when he was hired as a job developer. When he started at Veterans, Inc., they only had one grant. Currently, they now have six. This success comes about by delivering the goods. Richard has been managing the department for the past 15 months. And with that, here's Richard.
Good afternoon, everybody. In terms of community partnerships and what we do, basically when you have these grants, and we have four HVIP grants out of the six, and those four grants require about 350 placements this year. So that's pretty aggressive. I have a good staff of people that I work with, but basically when you have these grants, you have to make the metrics, which I call delivering the goods. If you're going to be able to maintain these grants and apply for other grants, you must make what they, you know, the employment and training numbers in particular. So with that, what we do is we reach out to all the community partners in the area, and we get very, very involved. And I'll go into some of the, what we do. There's a partnership out here called the Commonwealth Workforce Coalition, and that's basically a partnership of all nonprofits in Massachusetts. And we get very involved with all the other nonprofits and all the job developers, and we go to various meetings and we learn what they do, they learn what we do, but more importantly, they learn who we are and what we're looking for. And that is really what this networking is all about. As I get on this list, the networking is the key to basically servicing these grants. You need to be able to get your message out as to what you're doing and why you're doing it, who you're doing it for, and what you need to get done. So the Commonwealth Workforce Coalition is, as I said, basically a group of people who are in like situations, whether it be in a kind of a job corps situation setting or something like that, but they're all doing very similar things. So we meet to discuss what we do, and we try to, you know, compare notes. We also are members of the New England Workforce Development Professionals, so we meet with them on a regular basis. Again, it's all networking. Mass Rehab Commission is a commission out here that works, you know, that is a rehabilitation sort of thing, and we work with them very, very closely. We work with Catholic Charities. Now, Catholic Charities, again, they hire our people, but also they work with us to try to figure out what we're looking for, what we're trying to place, who we have in our database, who we have that maybe we can help them with. Lutheran Social Services is another one we work with. Operation ABLE for our 55 and older clients, which, believe me, are very difficult to place because there's a lot of prejudice you will find in anything, really. But 55-plus is a very tough clientele to place, particularly a homeless veteran client. So you're going to need to look at these resources and find out what you can do with them. So Operation ABLE is someone we work very closely with. We work with the Salvation Army. We find a lot of our clients at the Salvation Army. One thing we learned when we started working with these grants is a lot of our clients that you would think homeless veterans would be easy to identify, a lot of times they're hidden in a lot of these other agencies. Salvation Army has a lot of homeless veterans down there that don't even know we exist, for example. We're trying to find out where our homeless veterans are to offer these services. When you've got to provide this many jobs and training to this many people, you've got to go out and find the client base you're looking for. We have a pretty significant client base here at Veterans Inc., but it is not enough to service our grants, which means we go out looking for these clients all the time. So Salvation Army, Goodwill Industries is another one that Paulette mentioned. Obviously, we have Goodwill here, and there are veterans down there that are you know, in place down there that are homeless. We can work with those veterans. We can also offer them job development. You know, when you have an HVIP grant, you have the luxury of having training funds available. So we offer training services to these veterans anywhere we find them, and we can certify train them in either EMT or EKG tech or a CDLB driver. But when you have the funding, and the beauty of these funding, it gives you the ability to offer veteran services and other programs that aren't currently in your program. So you can reach out and help them and count them as a number. So we work with we go to all the food pantries in the area, all the soup kitchens in the area, because again, a lot of soup kitchens have homeless veterans in them, and a lot of times they don't even know about our program. And when they find out about our program, it's like, wow, a veteran program for homeless veterans. Who would have thought? So before you know it, you end up finding clients that didn't know you existed, and vice versa. So it's all about reaching out. We get very, very involved with the career centers and throughout the state, all the DVOPs and leavers. And if you don't know what the DVOP and leaver are, hopefully you do, but if you don't, it's a disabled veteran outreach person or a local veteran employment rep. And these people are in the career centers. They work with the veterans, and they're a great liaison for us in terms of identifying our population as well as trying to place our population. We also have in this state veteran service offices, which Massachusetts is very, very progressive in veterans benefits. So we have a veteran service officer in every single town and city in this state. So we reach every VSO in every town and every city in the state, and they know who we are, what we do, what we're looking for, and what we can deliver, and they refer their veterans to us. Again, it's all about trying to network and trying to find your population. We attend every single stand-down in all of New England. Now, we are based throughout New England. Obviously, this is Massachusetts where some of these grants are, but one of our grants is New Hampshire and Vermont. So we're in every stand-down in every state. And when you go to these stand-downs, again, it's all about meeting other agencies, other people, other groups that can help, you know, deliver the services we're trying to deliver. So when you go there, it's really more – it's one thing to go there and represent your agency, but when we go to these events, we'll have usually four or five of us at these events, and we'll always have a couple walking the grounds, walking the stand-down. If we go to a Veterans Expo, if we go to our Veterans Job Fair, if we go to a regular job fair, you always have two at the table, and you have a number walking around, passing out business cards and meeting other people. Because you'd be surprised what you come up with for jobs or for contacts when you pass out your business card and you end up meeting all these people at all these events. So we heavily, heavily populate any event that's going on in the state or actually in New England right now. There's always someone. Now, right now I have a team of 10 reporting to me right now, and I'm blessed to have 10 good people. But we really are busy every single day. So, as I said, we're very involved in all these events. We're super involved in the Chamber of Commerce. And I attended one of these webinars probably, I would say, 3 years ago, my first webinar. And I remember the person conducting the webinar saying that one thing you can do is belong to the chamber and become an ambassador. So we're involved in, I think, five chambers right now throughout the region. And we attend all the business after hours. We attend all the breakfast. Again, we never sit at the same table at a breakfast. We never stay together when we go out to a business after hours. It's not about us hanging out with each other because we really know each other already. If we go as a group, we identify ourselves by the jackets we wear. We have nice, a nice sport coat with our logo on it, and we break up and go out and meet people, pass out business cards. We basically spread the word of what our message is and what we do and what we're looking for and what we're trying to achieve. And it's very easy to sell veteran services in this day and age. So most people want to say, what can I do? How can I help? Can I volunteer? Can I donate? What can I do? So the more you get out and the more you do this, the better off you're going to become, and it becomes easier all the time. Again, I mentioned becoming an ambassador. I became an ambassador in the Worcester Chamber, which, for those of you that don't know, Worcester is the second largest city in the state of Massachusetts, only second to Boston, a very, very big city. And I'm an ambassador in the Worcester Chamber, which means that not only do I get to meet all the people, I get to meet all the new members, I get to go to all the other events besides just the business after hours and besides just the breakfast in the morning. So I really get to meet, you know, I'm on the retention committee. I get to meet all the people that maybe you wouldn't normally meet that don't come to all these various events. So what it does is, again, it helps you to spread the word. And I guess I probably said it enough, but I can't overemphasize. The key here is to spread the word on what you're trying to accomplish and who you're trying to do it for. And we have the luxury and the good faith, I guess, the good news, to work for veterans. And in this particular case, there's not many people that want to help veterans, particularly. So it really is a very good place to be in terms of applying for a grant and trying to service a grant. We interact with all the staffing agencies in all of our catchment areas. So any staffing agency that falls into our area, we call on them on a regular basis. At least once a week, we drop in and talk to someone in the staffing agency, drop off a business card. Why staffing agencies? Because in this economy right now, you're going to find, as you're trying to do placements, that there's a lot more temp to perm than there is permanent jobs out there, particularly with the clientele we're working with. The clientele we're discussing here is a homeless veteran clientele, and they're much more difficult to place than your average client. So we go out and work with these people, trying to place them on a temporary basis and then hopefully get them into a permanent situation. And as we work with the veterans, as we work with trying to place these veterans, we explain to them that, and you will find out, especially those of you that are trying to apply for a grant, that most of the people you deal with would like to have the job they left 5 years ago, or the job they left 4 years ago, or the job they left 6 months ago. But in most occasions, that isn't going to happen. So we try to tell them that, you know, we can A, get you a job, and that job is the job that you currently need, and then B, we can get you the job that you want after we get you the job that you need. So by getting them the job that they need, that helps us with our placement, and then we work with them on getting the job they want for the retention. So that's kind of the formula we use, and it's pretty successful. But I will tell you that without reaching out to all the various community liaisons that I just mentioned, you really can't build the program. It starts at the bottom, and it really is, as Paulette mentioned, I mean, we work 10, 12-hour days. When you go to a breakfast in the morning and you go to an after hours in the evening, it's the same day, which very often happens. You're talking to being at a breakfast at 6:30 to 6:45 in the morning and being at a chamber event at 8 o'clock at night. So there are long days, but it's an amazing, rewarding career that you have in this service. And you'll see that the best thing about this is when a veteran walks up and says, "You know, I've got my own place, I've got my own job, thanks to you. You guys really made my life." And basically, that's what we do here. We're in the business of rebuilding these guys' lives, these ladies' lives. So I think that's pretty much what we do and who we do it with and how we reach out. I'm happy to answer any questions. Unfortunately, I didn't make any slides. I'm sorry. I apologize, but I guess I really didn't realize I was supposed to. But any questions you have, I have a team of people sitting here with me, and we're happy to answer them. Thank you for that.
Thank you so much, Richard. At this time, we're going to open it up for Q&A, and if you have emailed me questions, I am in the process of emailing you back. Hope, at this time, if we can open it up. Thank you.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. That is star 1 to ask a question. Your first question comes from the line of Fastoria Pearson with Grandma's Hands. Fastoria, your line is open.
Sudden death, it looks like.
Your next question comes from the line of Marie Dobrath with Tampa Crossroads. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Okay, great. My question is for the second speaker. I was wondering, since it sounds like you're having some success with placing participants into temporary positions, and then hopefully if they're not able to get into a permanent position, you know, looking at a second job that's more along the lines of what they really want. And I guess my question is, at what point are you reporting these participants as exiters?
You exit the people, like, for example, in Q6, you would be exiting someone from Q2, I believe. So Q6 would be Q2, Q3 would be Q7, and you exit them, and you track the individual. Retention can be more than one job. So if a person, a lot of times you get them into a staffing situation, that may become a permanent job. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's a temporary job. It may be temporary. It may become permanent. But as long as you keep that person employed, it counts as retention. So quite often we'll have someone who may end up initially getting a job, let's say, for example, at Federal Express in the holidays, and they're working there November and December, and they're laid off in January. But we've established a resume. We've established the fact that this person went to work and has someone that can actually verify that they showed up at work every day. So now we try to get them another job, maybe working at a corrugated box factory, for example, but a permanent job. And again, this time it's permanent, and they've got a work record to go off of, and they go to work there. It still isn't the job they want, but now they're making more money than they were making before. And once they buy into the fact that they've got to start somewhere over again, because this basically is starting over again, ultimately we're very successful at getting them ultimately placed in a decent day job somewhere. But it does take time. It isn't usually the first, second, or third job, but it's all retention. As long as you keep them working, you can exit them as retention. And you know, at 90, 180, 270, it's only when they aren't working at all that you can't count them as an exit.
So just to clarify, once you've exited them, there are times when you're continuing to provide additional service to get them placed again?
Well, we need to track them. And we have the luxury here of having a grant called VWIP, which is a veteran out in the community. So we can actually take that person who's exited from our HVIP grant, we can put them into our VWIP grant and keep providing services in that grant. So it actually is a beautiful thing. The VWIP grant, I guess, is going to be going away. It may be available one more time, but having that grant allows us to work with that veteran and still count them in another grant. If you don't have that grant, you still have to work with that veteran. So sometimes you say to yourself, you know, I'm not even getting money for this grant anymore. Why am I still doing this? But it really is part of the deal. So if you have a person who does require services still, then you do have to still work with them, yes.
And we work with temp agencies here as well, and it depends on – the exit depends on the type of job it is. A long-term position, 6 months to a year, we do count that as a placement because it eventually will end up being a permanent placement. But if it's just a temp job for a week or two, we do not exit that individual. We keep them on and offer other supports, so we can still search for employment while they are working.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. So you're basically reporting them as a placement, even if maybe it's just a two-week temporary position, but you're not exiting them because they're not permanently placed, is what you're saying?
No, we don't count the two-week placement. To us, that's not permanent employment. It has to be 6 months or longer.
Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Megan Harless, Working Wardrobes.
Hi, Richard. This is Harry Humphreys with Megan at Working Wardrobes. We're in the process of starting up or increasing our veteran service program here in Orange County. You had mentioned you have some of your people trained as EMTs, which is, of course, a technical training program. I'm interested in what kind of relationship you developed with the agency that taught that certified course.
Sure. I'll pass it off to Joe Boylan sitting next to me. Joe Boylan runs our VWIP grant. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, good afternoon. Yes, we use several training agencies here. There's two private companies, but the primary one we work with is a firefighter, local fire program, and they have a training academy, and they're very much veteran orientated, and they give us a reduced tuition, I guess is the best way to put it, and very focused on veterans. They also have a placement program in there, and work very well with them too. Every veteran that we have placed through there into training has gained employment. We also use the American Red Cross to provide a lot of medical training as well, CNAs, phlebotomists, medical coders, and things like that.
And you find that they were offering reduced programs through negotiations on your part, or they do that as a matter of course?
We grovel a little bit, I guess, is the best way to put it. But, I mean, there's a very strong veteran contingent when you get into, you know, associations like firefighters. They're very supportive of us, and, you know, we tell them how much money we can spend, and we try to tailor a training program that meets the needs. We've done the same thing with private training companies back when the construction industry was really booming, and we negotiated training programs with construction industries to meet the financial expectation that we had coming out of the grant, and we made it work.
So in order to put on your grant application, you have that training capability. Does that require a memo of understanding between the two organizations, or just word of mouth?
Oh, absolutely. We get MOUs. We continuously get them, keep them updated, and then turn them into our business office and our grant writers. Yep, absolutely.
Okay. That's fine. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Fostoria Pearson, Grandma's Hands. Ms. Pearson, your line is open. If you have muted your line, please unmute yourself. Your next question comes from the line of Dan Ward, Veteran Incorporated.
Hi, I was wondering from the first speaker, from the nice lady that we heard from, if she has come across any way to fund training for DWI. We have quite a few clients, obviously, have lost their licenses due to DWI, and there's, at least here in New England, there's about a $400 fee that's required to be paid in order to reinstate licenses, and we're just trying to figure out ways, if there is a way, to get those fees paid for, if indeed there's a way that that's done, and I'm trying to find out if other states have figured out a way to do that.
No, we struggle with that same problem here. We can help if they have certain fees to get their license reinstated. However, the larger fees, such as those associated with DUIs, we cannot pay for those. So we are experiencing the same types of issues. We just refer them back to pay, and I'm not sure where it goes from there.
Okay. Thank you.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, press star 1. Your next question comes from the line of Lee Agarlo, American Legion.
I'm with the California State Area 1 Housing Commissioner, and we're in the process of trying to establish a farm work unit for our homeless veterans here in our rural areas of Nevada and Placer County. And one of the major problems that we seem to have is transportation. And like when the gentleman mentioned before, one of the ladies rather, I have been out in the woods and in the rivers talking to some veterans, and we found several of them just this past week that we're trying to help, and trying to help them not only with employment, but with services, with clothing. We use the surplus that we have from a stand down to help the homeless veterans throughout the year as they require clothing and other resources. My main question is regarding to employment, and wondering what the federal government is doing, the federal agencies, like the VA and the service organizations, the Army, Navy, Air Force. I have one veteran who is homeless, young from Afghanistan, has a degree, and is a chaplain. and I've been trying to help him locate both employment and housing. And he has advised me that he has submitted applications or resumes to the Veterans Administration, and apparently they will not accept a resume unless there is a vacancy for that specific skill. Now, I also retired from HUD and the Air Force in human resources, and we always had jobs that we had entry jobs at the GS-5, GS-7 level that if you had a degree, you could qualify for one of those positions regardless of the experience that you had. They're kind of intern positions. And again, my question is how, or does anybody know how we're doing in that arena to help those who do have an education, college degree?
I'll go ahead and take this one. This is Bailey with NCHV, and I apologize for any background noise that I might have on my line here. For that specific individual, if you want, we can actually probably talk about that offline to try and get him connected to some resources that are local there.
Okay.
As for the larger federal programs, I mean, HVRP participants aren't restricted to those who don't have that level of education. So if he has been experiencing homelessness, you know, he would still be eligible for that program. But in areas where HVRP might not be available, or if he doesn't meet those eligibility requirements, Department of Labor Vets has actually put together some really substantial resources to guide individuals to employment opportunities. My Next Move is a new resource that has been put out that you can find right on the DOL Vets website. I don't know if you guys have access, have the computer access that he can then use.
Absolutely.
Okay, that would be great. That might be a really useful tool for him to create the type of resume or to look through the employment opportunities that he might be interested in and eligible for. The great part about that tool is it's connected to the ONET, which I had on my slides earlier, which is basically real-time data related to employment opportunities. So that might be a good resource. But why don't you send me an email and we can set up some time to talk about that individual and some other opportunities later.
Okay, do you want me to get a number from you to call you or email and connect from that?
Yeah. And on the last slide of the presentation that you all have there, it has my email address as well as the NCHV phone number.
I get that, download that on my computer.
Yes.
I will do that after this here and then get in touch with you on that.
Okay, great. And just so if everyone wants to jot it down, if you have those kind of questions, you can also email me. My email address is bcrone@nchv.org. Carrie and I are both available to answer your questions. And if you have questions for our speakers, you can always just send those to us, and we can make sure that the speakers get those. I think we're about out of time, so I'll turn the phone back over to Carrie to close out the call.
Again, thank you very much.
Thank you. And just a reminder once again, if you are an organization that's interested in applying for the first time or reapplying for HVRP funds in response to the SGA that was held those calls next week, so be on the lookout for those announcements so you can register.
I want to thank you all so much for participating in today's call. If you did send in an email with questions for the presenters and they did not get answered, don't worry, I will give the questions to them and we will get an answer for you. If you have any additional questions, as Bailey said, you can find her email at the end of the presentation, or you can email me, and again, that's ksimpson@nchv.org. Thank you all so much and have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye now.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.